Are you looking to upgrade your game on and off the field? Triple Crown Jewelry makes the cleanest jewelry in the game so you can show your style. Their jewelry is made by athletes for athletes with durability and style in mind. They make the best-selling number pendants and chains that you're already seeing on the field. Whether your style is gold, matte black, or silver, Triple Crown Jewelry has what you need. Personally, I'm more about the silver, but Triple Crown is ready for whatever your style. The chains look great. They're durable with a shine that stands out. And when you put it on, it has a nice heft to it. You can feel the quality. Your number is yours. It's part of your identity, and Triple Crown knows that. They have numbers from 00 to 99 available, so you can show your number, your identity, on and off the field. Their jewelry will never turn your neck green or fade. They're tarnish-resistant and made to last. These aren't just accessories. They're a statement of your dedication and love for the game. And that shine is unmatched. And in addition to choosing between the three different finishes, you can also choose from a variety of chains, including rope, Franco, and Cuban chains. So try it yourself. If you're ready to elevate your drip on and off the field, get some new drip at triplecrownjewelry.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 25% off your first order site-wide with promo code BA2022. That's BA2022 at triplecrownjewelry.com. And by doing so, you're supporting our podcast. Orders are shipped the same or next business day from New Jersey, and orders over $50 get free shipping. Don't miss out on the opportunity to make a statement both on and off the field. Go to triplecrownjewelry.com and lead the league in drip.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome to another edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Today it is March 18th, and we have a brand new top 25 at baseballamerica.com, and we have a new number one team in the country. It is UCLA. We will dig into that in a second, but we have with us today Joe Healy and Dave Serrano. So welcome into the podcast again this week, guys.
Thanks, Teddy. Appreciate it. Glad to be back.
Yeah, Teddy, looking forward to it.
So as I mentioned there, we have a new number one team. It was a bit of a tumultuous week around college baseball. The conference play started for several teams, and that brought with it some marquee series and several top 25 series. And as a result, of course, some teams had to lose those, and therefore the rankings have a very new look to them. I mentioned UCLA takes over for Vanderbilt at number one. That's the first time we've had a changeover at the top of the rankings this season. And then beyond that, things also look a lot differently. Mississippi State is up to number two. And for both UCLA and Mississippi State, that is their highest ranking since the end of the 2013 season, when, of course, they met in the College World Series finals. And I will admit that it took me a full 6 hours after we finished the ranking for me to realize that. But I'm sure many fans picked up on that much faster than I did. Number three, still Stanford. They were idle last week for finals. And then number four is Texas, which is coming off a big series win against Texas Tech. Number five is Vanderbilt. North Carolina State makes a huge move up to number six. And then we round out the top 10 with Oregon State, North Carolina, Florida, and Louisville. Joining the top 25 this week, we had Texas A&M, which beat Vanderbilt 2 out of 3 at home for a huge series win for the Aggies. And Arizona State, which is the final undefeated team in the country, the Sun Devils, sitting at 19-0. They just swept Washington State to open Pac-12 play. So I encourage everyone to check out the full top 25 at baseballamerica.com if you haven't done so. There are plenty of nuggets about every team. Joe does a great job kind of rounding up each team's week. So make sure to check that out and see all the movement and see how all these teams, kind of got where they got this week. I want to talk about our new number one team, UCLA. The Bruins won the series against Oregon State, the defending national champions, last weekend. And they did it in an interesting fashion, I suppose. They started the weekend with an 8-0 win. They were really dominant on Friday night with Zach Pettway on the mound. And the offense really came alive. There was no Kevin Abel for Oregon State. He remains out with a back strain. And Grant Gambrell did a solid job, I guess. But he went 6 innings. But UCLA was able to get to him a bit, and they go on to win that game. Then it was a very tight game two that Oregon State came out on top with a 7-3 win. They kind of broke that open late. And Adley Rutschman provided some of that late offense for the Beavers. And then UCLA, in a kind of a wild back and forth Sunday affair, wins at 9-7, holds off a late Oregon State comeback. Adley Rutschman homered twice, but it wasn't enough for the Beavers. And UCLA wins a key series, kind of establishing themselves again as the team to beat in the Pac-12. They were that way coming into the season, but with the way that both they and Oregon State and Stanford had started, it was, it's a tight race at the top, and UCLA comes away with a very big series win. So I want to ask both of you guys, just what stands out to you the most about UCLA to this point, our new number one team?
Well, for me, Teddy, it's balance. I haven't personally seen UCLA this year, but in talking to Coach Savage and it's not only just balance. I think they're being a little surprised by what – I'm not being surprised, but I think he may be surprised by what the pitching is doing. I know that was a concern going into the season, but I put all my chips on the fact that John Savage is a great pitching coach. He's established himself over many years of developing pitching staff, and I think it's starting to come out that he is developing a good young pitching staff with good arms into a really good pitching staff. Their offense, we knew going into the season, that's continuing to flourish. They're playing good defense, but it's not just balance in all three of those areas. It's balance in their classes too. They're an experienced team, but they've got a great group of freshmen, sophomores that also are contributing. So I think it's balanced throughout the whole program. And John and his staff do a great job of recruiting. And obviously I feel that I said it early on. I think they were, on being from the West Coast, they may not get as much accolades, but I think that's a team that everyone's going to have to reckon with at the end of the year. I think they're only going to continue to get better when they get healthier. Everyone gets banged up, but when they get healthier, they're only going to get improve, in my opinion.
And they are starting to get healthier. Ryan Garcia, who was supposed to be their opening day starter and missed the first few weeks, he came back this week, started on Tuesday, threw about 30 pitches. And then on Sunday, came on in relief of Sean Bergen, who did not last very long against the Beavers, and went, I think it was 4 2/3, and picked up his first win of the year, pitched pretty well. John Savage told me that Garcia kind of was starting to look like he did back in January when they were so excited about him. So that is a very encouraging development for the Bruins. Joe, I know you did see UCLA early and came away impressed with the pitching, but what else about them has impressed you to this point?
Well, it's specifically with the pitching. It's kind of the way they fit that pitching staff together, because there was no doubt about the talent. It was kind of, how do those pieces fit, and what do you do when you lose a Ryan Garcia? And the way they've built that pitching staff with, kind of putting the freshman Bergen at the back of it. And he's, for the most part, he's thrived. You referenced kind of a shorter start this past weekend, but for the most part, he's done an outstanding job there. And then, Jack Ralston was exactly the right guy for that role in the rotation. And he might not have been the obvious choice, given that he really hadn't pitched for most of his career at UCLA. But he was the right guy for that moment, and he's really done a nice job there in the rotation. And they've got a good mix in the bullpen. And, obviously Kyle Moore is kind of their moment of truth reliever. But, they've gotten good work out of not just him, but guys like Jack Philby and Nathan Hadley and Holden Powell. So they're mixing and matching it really well. So it's not overly reliant on one guy out of the bullpen. It's not just, you know, four guys who are doing the heavy lifting, and there's no depth. There's depth. There's high-end talent. It's just a really, really good mix. And I think the way they've used Garcia, frankly, as he's come back has been kind of impressive, because sometimes when pitchers return from an injury, you kind of just find them innings here or there. But they've actually managed to use him pretty effectively. I mean, this weekend when they got a short start, they went to Garcia knowing that, you know, he's a guy who could stretch out a little bit and give us a few innings and kind of get us back on schedule, if you will. So that's just really kind of been a shrewd move there, the way they've used him in returning, and not just focused on, hey, let's get him some pitches. They focused on how can we, in the process of getting him some pitches, make him most effective for what we're trying to accomplish here. So I was kind of impressed by that. And it hasn't been easy. I mean, they lost Nick Nastrini, who was doing a fantastic job as their midweek guy. They lost him as well. So it really hasn't been an easy road for them. And it's got to be kind of scary. And I think I mentioned this after I saw him at Georgia Tech. I mean, it's got to be kind of scary for the rest of the Pac-12 that they really haven't been fully healthy yet on the pitching side of things. And at some point they will be healthier. And that is just going to make them even better. So, you know, chalk another one up for John Savage and his staff for figuring out the pitching side of things, and not just the high end of it. They've really got getting a lot from a lot of different guys.
Yeah, not just is the pitching staff potentially getting healthier now, but the offense was good to start the year, but they were doing it without a few of their, you know, big guns really going. Strumpf, Toglia, Matt McClain had all started kind of slowly. And this weekend, especially, you know, Strumpf had been kind of going for a week now, but I think Toglia and McClain especially took a step forward this weekend, and they did it against maybe the best pitching staff in the country. UCLA went out and scored a bunch of runs. And you know, so I think that, you know, if I put myself back in the mindset that I was in coming into the year, you know, I should be more impressed by the pitching. But now I'm at a place where I was like, wait, why was I even thinking? Like, I wasn't really questioning the pitching that much, but, you know, it was a concern of sorts. And now I'm wondering why I was ever doubting John Savage at all in terms of a pitching staff. And they look outstanding. They've came into the series with the top 10 ERA. I haven't looked at the numbers to see if it's still there, but it may very well be. And, you know, now if the bats are going to come around in the way that everyone's expected them to, especially Strumpf and Toglia, who look like potential top two rounds picks, and McClain, who was a first rounder last year, you know, all of a sudden that this offense is even better if Ryan Kreidler and guys like Kreidler and Stronach can keep doing what they've been doing to this point. You know, UCLA looks like a really, really dangerous team. And it's going to be tough for them still. The Pac-12 is a difficult beast this year, but getting this series win on the board right away to start the conference play, I think, is a big boost, you know, as UCLA starts to look forward. Now, the Bruins were able to move up to number one in part because of what they did this weekend and the rest of the season, but also in part because Vanderbilt lost a series at A&M. They looked great on Friday night. I thought they looked like absolutely the best team in the country on Friday night in that win. And then they started Saturday's game going well, and then A&M mounted a comeback, and Vanderbilt's bullpen couldn't hold it off. And then A&M really just kind of took it to them on Sunday to win the series. That's Vanderbilt's first losing weekend of the year, comes on the road to a good A&M team in conference play. But at the same time, is this cause for concern at all for the Commodores as they move forward in SEC play?
I don't think it's cause for concern, Teddy. It's one series. I think if you're Tim Corbin and staff, more of your concern is coming from your bullpen, your pitching, and defensively. I think that's what's let him down a little bit to this point. I saw them early on the first weekend, and I came back and I said their offense is a juggernaut, and they've held the form. They're hitting .320 as a team. They've stolen 21 out of 29 bases. They're fielding .980 fielding percentage. But I think what's happened is when it's like in Saturday's game, when it becomes crunch time and they need to hold the lead, that's when they break down a little bit. From their pitching staff, two big arms, you know, Drake Fellows is not off to a great start. He's pitching almost just under a 5 ERA, .488. Zach King, a guy that they've been using out of the bullpen. is at a 7.47 ERA. They're hitting 305 again. So those are two things that need to get fixed on that pitching staff. You can't put all the pressure on Kumar Rocker. He's a freshman. His numbers aren't great, but they're solid. They're not TJ Ginn numbers right now, but they're solid for a freshman that's walking into college baseball. But they're getting great performances out of Patrick Raby. He's 3-0 with an 0.70 ERA. But I think the concern is the consistency of the pitching. I have a lot of respect for Scott Brown. I'm sure he's going to figure that out. He's got a lot of good arms to play with, but they've got to get that fixed. And they've got the concern I saw early on was how were they going to play defense? They have a lot of guys in their lineup that are offensive, but how were they going to play defense? And I think that's been a little bit of a concern that the pitching, especially late in the game, they're not getting great, great starting pitching, but the bullpen has faltered some and their defense has let them down. But I don't think it's cause for concern. I mean, losing 2 out of 3 at Texas A&M, which is a good team. They've entered the top 25 for us now. They're a good, good team. I don't think that's cause for concern, but they've got some big series coming up. They got Florida this weekend at home, and I think it's Tennessee right after that. So it's hard to turn it around in the 10-week SEC play, and Vanderbilt's going to have to find a way.
Yeah, absolutely. Vanderbilt has no time to feel sorry for itself. They have to get right back at it because Florida's coming in for a series that I believe starts on Thursday. So, I mean, they got to get it right quick. I think that the pieces are there on the pitching staff. They just have to get it going. I'm a little less concerned about the defense, maybe. I think that they're good. There are some positions where they're clearly prioritizing bat over glove, but I think that they're going to be okay defensively. But Joe, what's your read on Vanderbilt at this point?
Yeah, I'll keep it brief because I think I agree with you guys just in general. But I actually would say, for the reasons Dave gave, I actually am a little bit concerned. Not in the grand scheme. I still think this is a very good team, going to be a top 10 team. I think, you know, all that stuff. Still a chance to go to Omaha, compete for national title. But where they might be a step back from where we thought they might be, I think, is enough reason for concern. That's if you start to look at, you know, year by year, you compare this year's pitching staff and what you see there to last year's pitching staff, and it starts to look fairly similar. I mean, down to the point that they literally, and I actually did not realize this till I pulled up the stat pages, they have the exact same team ERA right at this moment as they did at the end of last year. And that's not terrible. It's 4.23, and as they go through SEC play, like a 4.23 ERA will win you a lot of games because of the talent there. But towards the end of last year, it felt like they were maybe just kind of a pitcher or two short, and they were still kind of maybe feeling out some roles. And it's been better in spots this year. I mean, Patrick Raby's been outstanding, and so that's been a big pick me up. That's something that they really needed. But outside of that, I mean, the bullpen really faltered last week. I think the stats I put in the roundup were something like 12 runs scored against the bullpen and 9 2/3 or something along those lines. And 2 2/3 innings of that were Tyler Brown scoreless. So it was really 12 and something like 7 innings from everybody else. So I would actually argue that there is a little bit of a reason for concern, because if you felt like maybe they were a little short on the mound last year, this year, at least to this point, is very, very similar in terms of there's, you know, a handful of guys doing a lot of heavy lifting, and but an even bigger group of guys they're still trying to find some consistency from.
I think one thing about that is Vanderbilt has played several 5-game weeks. They've had some travel in there. I think it's been hard for them to, and you throw in the rain. I think it's been hard for some of them to get bullpens in between games to, you know, really work on some stuff. And maybe as the season calms down here a little bit, as they get into conference play a little more, they'll have some time to work on some stuff, and Brownie will be able to get some of those guys right. But they absolutely have to, because right now Tyler Brown is the reliable arm in the bullpen, and I don't know how many other arms coming out of there they really can trust to come in and get a few outs, no problems. And they are going to need to correct that, especially because this is not Vanderbilt's best starting rotation. This is not Fulmer and Buehler. It's a good rotation, I think, ultimately, but it's not that. So they are going to need to rely on the depth of their arms a little more than maybe the elite arms at the top of the table here. So it'll be interesting to see how it comes together. They need to have a good result this weekend, but then so does Florida, because Florida's coming off of a series loss against Mississippi State. So it's going to be I mean, it's always high stakes when Vanderbilt and Florida get together, but this weekend especially is going to be interesting. And that is what we call a good transition in this business, because I want to talk about Mississippi State and what they did this weekend and really what they've done all season long. They have been really very impressive. I know we've talked about them here on the podcast before, but what they did going into Gainesville, winning a series down in McKeithen Stadium was very, very good. They won the first two games of that series, and they kind of jumped out on Florida's starting pitching in some respects down there. And, you know, we're able to stave off a late comeback in one of those games. And just in general, Mississippi State came out and played very well this weekend. Florida wins the third game, which was the second game of a doubleheader on Saturday. Of course, it did rain in Gainesville, so they played a doubleheader on Saturday instead of playing that last game on Sunday. But again, Mississippi State comes out with Ethan Small and JT Ginn, and Small especially was really good. Ginn kind of ran into maybe the first problems of his college career late in that start against Florida. They started getting to him, but ultimately Mississippi State rolls, and they are up to number two in the top 25, and right now, they look like the best team in the SEC. The way they're playing right now is just very, very impressive. Joe, you've seen Mississippi State. I know you came away impressed, but you know, just as they continue to roll over the last several weeks, what is it about this team that's impressing you?
Well, I mean, first things first. I mean, you mentioned it there, and that, you know, I've said this before, but Small and Ginn are just as good as any 1-2 in the SEC at this point with what they've accomplished. And Small was that again. And Ginn, I think that was instructive for them, you know, seeing Ginn in that environment. And, you know, he shut them out through five innings. And so I think that is instructive, just that, okay, you know, he did some nice things, but, you know, we saw where maybe he hit a little bit of a wall. And I think that kind of helps, you know, Ginn himself and the coaching staff kind of, you know, maybe next time around, be able to maybe be a little more aware of when that might be on the verge of coming through, end up happening. So I think that was actually just overall very positive for JT Ginn there, because he looked the part. He was certainly not out of place against Florida on the road in that environment. So I think that was all positive there. You know, when I look at their team, though, I think one of the things that I'm struck with, and I, you know, I noticed this when I saw him in Frisco and just kind of felt this way before I really looked at the stats, but when you look at the stats, you really, it hits home that there really aren't any holes in this lineup. And that's not necessarily the same thing as the lineup being an absolute gauntlet, because don't get me wrong, I mean, Justin Foskey has been great this year, and of course Jake Mangum is Jake Mangum, and Elijah McNamee's been great, but more so than that, I mean, they do have some of that star power, but it's not necessarily you know, 1 through 9 just, you know, star studded and everybody has just light tower power or anything like that. But there really aren't any holes. You've got, you know, Rowdy Jordan is hitting 159, and so he's kind of struggled a little bit. But outside of that, they don't have anybody who's gotten what I would define as regular playing time hitting worse than 269. And that's Tanner Allen, who, you know, has 3 home runs and 6 doubles and is, you know, getting on base at a 355 clip. So that's pretty solid. And so that just makes it to where the opposing pitchers just never really get a break, no matter who they're facing throughout the lineup. And so there's just, Dave used the word balance for UCLA. I kind of feel that way about Mississippi State as well. The pitching is, for me, kind of the headline item there, but offensively, it's not one of those lineups where you can just kind of pitch around 1 or 2 guys. There's 1 through 9 can really beat you. And I think a great example of that this past weekend was Josh Hatcher, a guy who just hasn't played that much this year. But he got a couple of chances over the weekend, went 4 for 7 over the weekend. Now in the season, he's 9 for 18 on the year. So that just kind of gives you an idea. This is a guy who clearly has earned the opportunity to get some playing time, and maybe that's starting to happen for him. But, you know, if you can go 4 for 7 against Florida, you clearly can get the job done, but there just really hasn't been that much of a chance for him to see the field. But it gives you, that's kind of instructive and gives you an idea of the type of depth that they have offensively. So at this point, I mean, we came into the year thinking that they were behind Vandy, behind LSU, behind Florida, and then, you know, they were kind of in that mix with an Ole Miss, for example, in the SEC pecking order. But at this point, I think you're right, Teddy. I mean, at this point, this is a team you have to take very seriously as a potential SEC champion in the regular season. I don't know how you could see what they've done so far and kind of come to really any other conclusion than that. I mean, will there be some shifting throughout the SEC pecking order the rest of the year? Absolutely. That's just the way that conference works. And nobody in the SEC wins that conference. Not nobody. It's happened before. But in the modern SEC, the very few teams are going out there and going 25-5. So teams are going to lose some games. There'll be some shifting. But Mississippi State is as good as just about anybody in this league.
Absolutely. And, you know, that 1-2 punch is going to give them a chance to win every weekend. And it's just such an impressive start for both Small and Ginn. But, Dave, The SEC had several marquee matchups, and I know you were very impressed by what Georgia did going on the road to sweep South Carolina and the Bulldogs. They continue their impressive start to the year as well, and they are they've won all five of their series. They start SEC play with a sweep, and you know the Bulldogs are now up to 11 in the top 25. So what has impressed you to this point, or I guess what stood out to you the most when you were looking at Georgia this weekend?
I'm really happy for Scott Strickland. They had some down years there when he first took over, and now they're starting to kind of show what Georgia baseball should do. They're in the heart of a lot of talent. They obviously are keeping some at home. You know, and I'll be the first to say, and I think they would admit it too, they haven't scheduled at a conference. They didn't play a real tough schedule, but they took care of business where they needed to take care of business. Now they go on the road, tested for the first time on the road. They sweep a South Carolina team. You know, they've got some good arms in their rotation. Emerson Hancock, who's got a good arm, and Tony Losi, who's kind of figured it out. As a freshman, he had a great arm, but was kind of wild. Figured out pitching at a 2.17 ERA. Emerson Hancock at an 0.58. Both them are averages against are really low. They've got some good arms in their team. And then Aaron Shuck, a two-way guy who they're using very sparingly, has only pitched 8 innings out of the bullpen, but he's got 7 saves for them. So they're doing it with their pitching. They've got great pitching numbers. But offensively, they've got a quartet of 4 guys that are just tallying up a ton of numbers. LJ Talley, Ryan King, Tucker Maxwell, and Aaron Shuck, the two-way guy, they're all with tremendous averages. They've hit that quartet has hit 16 of the team's 25 home runs, and they've driven in 70 of the team's 147 RBIs. So they've got a quartet in that lineup that's really driving in a lot of runs, run production with some power. And the guy who I personally know, because I recruited him one time, is Cam Shepherd, their shortstop. He's playing great defensively, but has gotten out of the gate a little slow offensively, only hitting 267. So you add him to the mix when he gets his bat going, and they're only going to get scarier. I think this is a really good Georgia team. I think they've got some good arms. They've got a good balance offensively. I believe they're somebody that's going to make a run at that East. If you look after this weekend, obviously the West had their way with the East, and only Georgia, who swept South Carolina, was the only team with a winning record coming out of this weekend. And I think they're going to give Vandy, Florida, who have been the top dogs on the East, they're going to give them a run for their money this year. But I really like Scott Strickland's team at Georgia this year.
Yeah, the way that they've played has really been impressive. And, you know, to go up to South Carolina, which, again, is a team that won a series against Clemson, you know, is an impressive sweep to start SEC play. And then this week they get LSU at home. So they get, you know, one of the better teams in the West, but they get them at home, and it would be a big result. I think both of those teams go into this weekend with something to prove. LSU, of course, you know, still trying to figure some things out. And, you know, the one time they went on the road for a weekend, it did not go well at Texas. So they have to go prove that they can win on the road. And Georgia has another opportunity to pick up a marquee series win at the start of SEC play. So big week coming up for Georgia, but they're coming into the week with some momentum, sitting there at 18-2 and undefeated in the SEC, which, it's hard to do a whole lot better than that right now for the Bulldogs. So very impressive start to the season for them. Now, I mentioned Texas in beating LSU a couple weeks ago, and Texas continues to roll. They open Big 12 play this week. They played Texas Tech in a matchup of the two conference favorites there in the Big 12, and Texas comes out with a series win. They really had to earn this one, but I've really been impressed with the Longhorns' resilience this year. I saw the last two games of that series here in Austin, and I mean, that was the biggest thing that I walked away from, was just so little went right for Texas in the first half of the rubber game. They're getting no hit through five innings. They had to make a pitching change in the third inning. Then one of their key relievers walks off the mound with a trainer and a shoulder injury. And David Pierce ran through half a dozen arms out of the bullpen, just looking for someone who could throw strikes. And they've still found a way to win. They rallied. They got a big three-run inning there in the sixth inning, and kind of just carried that over to a 4-3 win, held off a late Texas Tech comeback, and they come out with a series win. This Texas team, it might not be the most talented team in the top five. It's definitely not the most talented team in the top five, but they just keep winning, and they're playing one of the better schedules in the country. They've already played LSU, Stanford, and Texas Tech, three teams that we think very, very highly of. And they've done a great job in those games. I mean, yeah, they went 1-3 out in Stanford, but Stanford's one of the best teams in the country for sure. And I have this team, Splendish Falk Field, they have an attitude that is going to serve them very well as the season goes on. They've already overcome some adversity this year. You know, they're down a catcher, they're down a shortstop, with DJ Petrinski and David Hamilton, there it is, out for the season with injuries. But the Longhorns just keep finding a way to win, and I just continue to be impressed by what David Pierce has done with this team here in his third season. But Dave, when you look at a team, that plays with that kind of attitude, that plays with that kind of resiliency, just how difficult is it to get that out of a team?
Well, it does. You said it perfectly, Teddy, and I'm going to give kudos to David Pierce. I personally know him. You know, first of all, taking over a Texas program, following the legend of the late Augie Garrido, that's not easy in itself. That's a tough task before you even put a team together, to follow in those footsteps at a heralded program like Texas. But in my belief, that's what David Pierce is. He's a tough-minded man, young coach. He's done that at his other stops. He's got those programs to win. There's no reason why he won't do it at Texas at maybe even a higher level because of the resources they have. You said it perfectly. They're not maybe the most talented team. Their numbers aren't great. They're not off the board. They're hitting 249 as a team. They've got a good DRA at 297, but it's just that they're finding ways to win. And, you know, they, like you said, they played a tough schedule, so they've been battle tested, and for me, they're the team to beat in the Big 12 right now. And it's still early on. They've played one weekend. Some teams haven't even started their weekend. But for me, there's a lot of teams that have gotten off to great starts that I still think we have some question marks about because of maybe who they've played. But I don't think we have that about Texas. They don't have maybe the unscathed records like other teams do have. They have a good record. But I think the resiliency and the toughness that they have shown is going to take them a long ways. I think it starts at the top. And I think you got to give credit to David Pierce and his staff for what they've done to put this team together. They've had some blows. The Hamilton loss, as we talked earlier in the year, we thought that was going to be a major blow because I think he's an outstanding player. But they've just turned their head and keep going, and they don't let it bother them. And I think they are going to be someone to be reckoned with when it's all said and done because they have the toughness and the resiliency to get through this 56-game schedule and beyond with all the adversity you hit over the course of the season.
I think that's a great point. Texas has seven losses, which is more than most of the teams that you'll see around them in the top 25. But I also think I know almost exactly who Texas is as a team, and they're winning games against good competition, despite some of these flaws as a team. And some of these other teams just haven't had those flaws exposed yet, and they will. Whereas I know that Texas has some issues. Offensively, they're not great right now. And I think that'll get better, but this is not going to be an offensive juggernaut. But they've shown that doesn't matter that much because their pitching staff is as good as it needs to be to win games 4-3 against really good offenses like Texas Tech. So I've just been very, very impressed by the Horns so far this season. Dave mentioned there that not everyone in the Big 12 has gotten going in conference play yet. Texas Tech and Texas were really the only ones that started this weekend because they both will take a finals week off in May. So they get an early start. Everyone else gets going this weekend. Joe, the league is a little wide open, I guess, behind those two teams. Just what who do you see that's going to challenge Texas at the top? Or, you know, is Texas Tech the biggest challenger? Or who else can get in that mix?
Yeah, so I think Tech still is the biggest challenger just because of they're just so incredibly talented. And so I think they are going to get back in that mix. They'll have something to say about the Big 12 title race before it's all said and done. But the other team to watch here is Oklahoma, I think. And, you know, a team we've written about in the recent weeks. And they've really kind of kept it rolling. Anybody who was kind of waiting for this team to start to show, you know, some weaknesses, it really just hasn't happened yet. And what's interesting about their schedule, this could be one of those deals where, you know, Tech is probably the actual answer here. But you could look up on, you know, something like, you know, April 28th, when they finish, Oklahoma finishes its series on the road against Kansas State, and Oklahoma could really be rolling in the Big 12 and look like the biggest challenger to Texas, presuming Texas stays at the top. But their final three weekends, this is Oklahoma, are home for Texas Tech, the Bedlam series against Oklahoma State, and at Texas. So a very, very backloaded schedule, you know, probably the two best teams in the conference and then a rivalry series against an enigmatic but talented Oklahoma State team. So it's one of those deals where, like I said, I think Tech's probably the actual answer, but I think Oklahoma is going to be able to put some standings pressure a little bit on Texas, because I think with their backloaded Big 12 schedule, they're going to be able to, metaphorically speaking, run up the score a little bit in the standings, at least early on. You know, for the Sooners, it's just been a matter of a lot of the questions that we had about them, they've answered in the affirmative, probably better than even the most wide-eyed optimist probably would have assumed. I mean, they came into the year with a rotation with some question marks. You knew what you were getting in Nathan Wiles, and he's been solid. But Levi Prater and Cade Cavalli, who were new to the rotation, at least for the most part, we didn't know what we were going to get from them necessarily, and they've been even better than Wiles. Levi Prater has been nothing short of outstanding, and Cade Cavalli still, you know, the walks are maybe a little higher than you'd like them to be, but he's striking out a ton of guys, and he's proving to be hard to hit, and his ERA is right around two. And then in an embarrassment of riches, you know, Ben Abram, their fourth starter, has been excellent as well. You know, he's walked one guy in 22 innings, so that's pretty doggone good. And, you know, when I talked to Skip Johnson a few weeks ago, he mentioned that, you know, it sounded to me like they were still kind of trying to figure out who their guys were in the bullpen. He felt pretty good about a core of guys they had out there. But then you look at the stat sheet, and it's a lot of, you know, this guy's got five appearances. This guy's got seven. These three have nine appearances. This guy's got eight appearances. So maybe that is still the case, and he's still trying to figure out who that core is. But, you know, Legend Smith, zero ERA in the 2/3 innings. Ryan Madden, zero ERA, eight innings. Jason Ruffcorn, the A&M transfer, you know, 159 ERA. So it's depth, but there's the high-end numbers there. That has just gone really, really well. And offensively, you know, Tyler Hardman's kept it up. Briley Ware is a guy who just hits. He's done nothing but hit since he's been in Norman. So it's kind of the usual suspects offensively, along with Brandon Zaragoza, who I wrote about when I wrote about them a couple weeks ago, that, you know, the glove was never in doubt, but maybe the bat's coming around a little bit more. His average is down from where it was when I wrote about that, where he was up in the high 300s. It's down at 293 now, but he's still doing a really nice job, and he's walking more than he strikes out. And so if that's the kind of thing you're getting from a defense first shortstop like Zaragoza, you're doing pretty well. So don't sleep on the Sooners necessarily, because like I said, I think you're going to look up at the end of April, and given the way their schedule plays out, I think they're going to be right in that mix. And the question will just be, can they go through that gauntlet at the end of the year and in those nine games come out closer to 5-4 and not so much 2-7 or what have you. So that's going to be the question for me. But, you know, I think it's Texas Tech, and then kind of the dark horse there is Oklahoma.
Yeah, I think Oklahoma is an interesting team here at the start of the year. And I also think that TCU might make a play for this a little bit. You know, just the fact that they have Nick Lodolo, Brandon Williamson there in the rotation, I think those two guys really can make a difference for them if they can get some consistency from some other pieces around those guys. They can play with any of these teams just because they have what they have there at the front of the rotation. if those guys do what they're supposed to do. And they're going to get Texas this weekend and at home. And if they're able to take advantage of that home field there in Lupton Park, maybe the Horned Frogs can make a statement at the start of Big 12 play and then carry some momentum through. But I think it is going to be important for them to get a good start this weekend and next weekend as well when they play Oklahoma State. They need to take advantage of playing at home against some of these tougher teams in the conference at the start so that they don't dig themselves a deep hole that then they're trying to get out of. Because in this Big 12, I don't know that that's going to be possible. When you have teams like Texas and Tech and Oklahoma rolling along right now, I think that you got to make sure you start conference play strongly if you're a team that's trying to challenge here for the Big 12 title. Now, a couple other things here that I wanted to run through. One of them, Arizona State, 19-0. As I mentioned at the top, last undefeated team in the country. As North Carolina State lost on Sunday in the series finale against Florida State, although they gave that a serious run for the money in trying to sweep that series there in Raleigh. But Arizona State finds a way against Washington State. They needed to walk off on Saturday night, played a tight game on Sunday, but ultimately the Sun Devils still undefeated. Dave, just how impressive is 19-0 for these Sun Devils?
Well, it's really impressive, and I know in many of our top 25 talks, they're now in our top 25, and deservedly so. It's been about the maybe the lack of strength of schedule, and I think that could be accused to many people around the country that have gotten off to wonderful starts. But when you have a two-headed monster with Hunter Bishop and Spencer Torkelson that are putting up unbelievable numbers, and Bishop was actually taking the lead after Torkelson's last year. It starts with their offense, and it's an offensive ballpark, and especially this time of year where the ball's traveling well. But the part for me that the credit needs to be given is what they're doing on the pitching staff, led by Alec March, who's now 5-0. He's their Friday guy. I think for many people around the country, including myself, I think it's been their pitching staff, the impressiveness of their pitching staff of what is the reason why they're doing so well. We all knew that they were going to be offensive with some of the names they have throughout that lineup, and they've got experience throughout the lineup. But I believe it's been the pitching that they had early on in the year. They were talking about, were they going to have enough depth? They lost some guys late, right before the year. The pitching's been impressive. And I don't care who you play in college baseball, because there's such parity. When you start out 19-0, that is a fabulous start to a great season. And will they go undefeated? Absolutely not. They'll be dinged somewhere along the way in Pac-12 play, but it's an impressive start for Tracy Smith and the Sun Devils, and they're well deserving of being ranked in our top 25. And they're a team to be reckoned with. I mean, like I said, I'm not discounting that they didn't play a great schedule out of the gate. They've only played one game on the road when they went to Cal State Fullerton and beat the Titans. They'll start to get tested. But they have a lot of confidence going right now, and you could just tell. I've seen some videos of some of their games. They got some swagger. They've kind of got that Sun Devil swagger back. So they're going to be a tough opponent as the season plays out.
Absolutely. I mean, they've just built an incredible amount of momentum and confidence, and we'll see how well that carries through. And this weekend, they will hit the road for the first time on a weekend to play at Oregon. It will be interesting to see how that turns out and how they continue to chase their undefeated streak here, how long they can continue that into the season. Joe, we've talked about a lot of teams so far here on the podcast, but who haven't we talked about? Who aren't we talking about yet in college baseball this season that we should be?
Well, the answer is Indiana State, and here's why. I think there's a compelling case to be made for the Sycamores, not just because they're 16-1, all of that alone is impressive enough. And let me, before I really get going here, put a big giant caveat, because I, as much as anyone else, understands that it's still a touch too early to take too much stock in the RPI. But with that being said, I am a big believer in the fact that, I mean, look, we're a third of the way through the regular season at this point, as hard as that might be to believe. And so we are at a point, though, where I think you can kind of take what the RPI is giving you and kind of start to get a good idea of what it might look like in certain ways. So the reason I bring up Indiana State is because they're currently sitting at 5 in Warren Nolan's RPI. And so, 6. And so that, you know, that might kind of strike you as that's a little off, but, and granted, some of it is they have played a lot of road games. But it's starting to look like Indiana State might be the team in 2019 that is maybe in a best case scenario, a 2019 version of Stetson or maybe Jacksonville. I know Stetson's a lofty bar because they ended up hosting at the end of the year. And I don't know that it's that, but you know, Jacksonville was a team that, really hung around in that, you know, I remember talking a little bit last year in April about how when Jacksonville and Stetson played, that that might have been a series for the right to host. And I think Stetson ended up sweeping it. And that was actually a big catalyst for them. So that's kind of like a best case. But I think even at worst case, assuming Indiana State continues to win games and doesn't collapse from here, which looks unlikely, of course, I think kind of they're a worst case. Maybe they're this year's Northeastern, where, you know, maybe the high end wins aren't there. You know, but they've taken care of their business. They've won a bunch of games and the RPI just kind of keeps them, high up. And then you look at kind of their individual resume and, you know, prepare yourself for some resume analysis on, whatever it is, March 18th. So a little bit early, but this is right in my wheelhouse. I enjoy this kind of stuff. So, but here's my evidence for why this might be the case. For one is that if you look ahead, and again, the caveat of the RPI, these RPI numbers will change, but you know, looking at what they have ahead of them, they only have 3 more games this year against RPI 200 plus. And right now that's a series against Valparaiso, which has an RPI of 208. I think Valparaiso's RPI might actually get a little bit better as they get into Valley play. So that might not even be a 200 plus RPI by the time things are all said and done. And Indiana State is sitting there at 6 in the RPI as of right now, having already played games against UNC Wilmington, RPI 213, Iona, RPI 232, and then 3 games this past weekend at home, mind you, against RPI 235 Citadel. And, you know, if they play 3 games against the RPI 235 and they don't move, that suggests to me that there's something baked into the RPI that the RPI really likes about Indiana State. So I think you can extrapolate this out to the entire Missouri Valley Conference. And, you know, Teddy and I had an offline discussion about maybe this year's Missouri Valley is last year's Atlantic Sun, you know, with Stetson and Jacksonville and, you know, Gulf Coast was in the mix there for a while, but you know, Indiana State's at 6, Illinois State is at 30, Dallas Baptist is at 58, and Dallas Baptist is going to get better. They've just played a lot of home games, more so than really anybody else in the Missouri Valley. But, you know, Evansville is at 75 in the RPI. Bradley just outside the top 100 at 102. I don't know that this is – I tweeted this on Saturday night. I don't know that this is 2015, the Missouri Valley, when Dallas Baptist and Missouri State hosted. That seems like a little – asking a little too much. It's a bit of a stretch goal, if you will. But I do think it could be Missouri Valley 2015 in that they get – 3 teams into regionals. I could see that, you know, being something that's just incredibly likely, you know, to say, to put it bluntly. You know, Dallas Baptist is probably going to be an at-large discussion. If Indiana State stays hot, then all you'd need is a Cinderella team to win your tournament, or maybe 3 teams are in at-large range. So we'll have to see on that. But long story short, Indiana State is a team that I think we should be talking about because of the record, but also because that kind of has... I'm starting to get the whiff of RPI darling smell there with Indiana State. And again, they're going to have to continue winning games, but it's starting to kind of feel that way with them.
Well, here's the crazy thing about what Indiana State has ahead. They have 12 games against Big Ten schools still to be played. And essentially, that's almost a Big Ten or Big Ten schedule as it is. And so, I mean, they have opportunities still for not only RPI wins, but kind of marquee series wins, because a couple of those are against Michigan. And, you know, I also on the larger Valley point, Missouri State doesn't look good right now, and the Valley still looks this good. I don't know what to make of that necessarily. I don't know. Maybe Missouri State will bounce back in the Valley. But when you have what is typically one of the powerhouses in a conference that is down, usually the conference does not pop up then, but that is what looks like is happening right now. So just an impressive statement to this point from Indiana State and also Illinois State, you know, and of course DBU still rolling right along. So the Valley is an intriguing conference. That coincides nicely with them not being good at all at basketball this year. Their lone entrant in the basketball tournament is a 15 seed of Bradley. So what we often think of as a bigger basketball league is this year popping up in baseball, which is that's fun to see. So with that, let's move on to our shout outs where we mention, players, coaches, schools, stories, whatever, that we haven't gotten to on the podcast to this point, but are worthy of mention. So Dave, let's start with you.
Well, first I want to say, Teddy, I'm a little disappointed that you're not doing the hot dog taco challenge again and going straight to the shout outs. But, in regards to the shout outs, first and foremost, this is, an obvious one, but, Jake Kuchmaner from East Carolina throwing a perfect game this weekend against Maryland. That's coming off of just a couple weeks going in the ninth inning, almost no hitting Ole Miss. So Jake's off to an impressive year, obviously helping the Pirates being ranked in our poll and having a good season. But congratulations to Jake. Another shout out to Titan Hank Laforte. 62 games now of his on-base streak, which is absolutely amazing, dating back to last year. And even though the Titans are struggling offensively and struggling as a team, which is a little uncharacteristic right now, Hank continues to do his part as a table setter and as a leadoff man. So congratulations to Hank there. And then John Savage winning number 500 at UCLA. We've talked a lot about UCLA, now our number one team, but like I said, John's a very impressive coach, a good person, a good friend of mine, and congratulations, John, on win number 500. My team shout out goes to the Dukes of James Madison. All they did this weekend was go all the way across the country to a heralded Cal State Fullerton program, win game 1-0, win game 2-0. They ended up losing 12-3 in the finale, but they took 2 out of 3 at Titan Field. At Goodwin Field, and the first time the Titans were shut out back-to-back in the James Madison Dukes do that. The Dukes are off to a great year, 14-6, and all the credit, I give a lot of credit to Coach Eikenberry. They've already played Louisville, which they end up getting sweeped in the Louisville series, and then they go to Fullerton, they win 2 out of 3, and they play at Lafayette and win 2 out of 3. So great scheduling by him. Three very tough weekends, and for them to get off to a 14-6 start, that's a very good sign for James Madison baseball. So those are my shout-outs for the week.
Yeah, I mean, Joe and I just spent a lot of time talking about how good the Valley is. The CAA is, again, this year absolutely lit. I'm very excited to see how that plays out. I don't think we'll see if it's as good as the Valley. I don't know if it has the RPI numbers right now that are there, but the teams are very, very interesting. When you look at James Madison, you look at Elon with its two big arms, Brnovich and Kirby. Northeastern is putting together another nice year, and Charleston and Wilmington are always solid. So that conference is also one to keep on your radar, even though it is obviously not one of these power conferences. The CAA looking like another intriguing year in the Colonial. Joe, what do you got?
Don't you worry, Dave. There will be hot dog talk. my shout out is to Mercer and their 10-cent hot dog promotion. I think it's a kind of a Friday night deal. I don't know if it's some Fridays or if it's every Friday. Every Friday seems like it would be a little much, but some Fridays perhaps. So get out of here with your dollar hot dogs. The new hotness is 10-cent hot dog night. So I thought about, Teddy tweeted about us talking about how many 10-cent hot dogs we could eat. And I thought about it and, when I've been to dollar hot dog nights and whatnot, I always just overdo it. I always think I can eat more hot dogs than I can. The problem is the bread. That's just a lot of bread, especially if it's one of the problems with ballpark hot dogs, as we all know, is that, it's hard to keep the bun kind of nice and soft. It either gets kind of crunchy on the outside or it's just really, really dry and it kind of feels like you're eating, particle board or something. So that would really be the key there. I always grab I try to eat 4 or 5 of them and I get through 3 and feel awful. And it's time and time again, I make the same mistakes. I don't learn at all when it comes to cheap hot dogs. So, but I think it's a cool promotion in all seriousness. It's kind of a cool promotion. I think one of the things college baseball does pretty well honestly, is some of these kind of, I go back to the banana bread giveaway at University of Georgia a few weeks ago. Like, you know, that's kind of the things that I think college baseball does really well. I know minor league baseball gets a little more shine for that kind of thing just because it's more high profile. But college baseball does a good job, too, of finding unique ways to get folks to the ballpark and then keeping folks at the ballpark engaged. So kudos to Mercer for that 10-cent hot dog night. A couple on-the-field things. You know, Belmont off to a nice 5-1 start in OVC play. As this podcast's foremost enthusiast on OVC baseball, I felt obligated to mention them. And you know, it's a team that struggled in OVC play last year, missed the tournament, was something like 11-19 in the league, so already just about halfway to their win total last year. And one of those series wins was against Morehead State, the team that you know, in my OVC preview had predicted to win the conference. And the OVC is a league that beats up on each other, so and I, in years when Tennessee Tech is not a juggernaut, of course, but I don't think there's a Tennessee Tech this year in that league, so it remains to be seen if they hold on to that. But 5-1 start, certainly nothing to sneeze at there. And Stephen F. Austin, the Southland Conference, off to a 6-0 start, a series sweeps of Houston Baptist and Lamar. You know, I thought Lamar would be, and maybe they still will be, but you know, I know Lamar is a team that the coaches in the preseason seem to think fairly highly of as a bounce back candidate in that league under Will Davis. And like I said, that still may be the case. Maybe SFA is just that much improved as well. So something to watch there in the Southland Conference with the Lumberjacks off to a quick 6-0 start.
Outstanding. Love the Lumberjacks because. What a nickname.
Oh, absolutely.
I wanted to mention Miami of Ohio, which is on a 12-game winning streak, which is the third longest in the country. So absolutely shout out to the Maction. The Red Hawks admittedly have not played the best competition during that streak, but that is about to change. They have to play Eastern Kentucky in the midweek, and then they start MAC play with conference favorite Kent State up in Kent. So we are going to find out a lot more about Miami this week, but 12-game winning streak for the Red Hawks, very impressive start to the season for Miami. I also wanted to mention Grant Judkins at Iowa, who is a two-way player, kind of, sort of. He had a pinch hit walk-off in the first game of a doubleheader yesterday against Northridge. It was his first hit of the year. Picked a great time for it. I think he's like 1-for-5 now. But then he got on the mound and threw 8 innings in the nightcap, held the Matadors to 1 run on 3 hits, and Iowa comes away with a 3-1 victory and sweeps the doubleheader. So just a very nice Sunday for Grant Judkins out at Iowa. Love the two-way guys that wind up winning both games of a doubleheader. Just fantastic college baseball only stuff right there. And then I also wanted to mention that this weekend, this isn't so much of a shout out, although it kind of is, but this weekend in the SWAC, we've got Grambling and Southern playing. And that's one of college sports' better rivalries. And in baseball, it doesn't always mean what it means in football. But this weekend, they're going to play, and they're at the top of the West Division in the conference, which is a change. Usually Texas Southern kind of dominates that division. But this year, Grambling and Southern both already have series wins against Texas Southern. And this weekend are going to meet in a series that could go a pretty long way to determining who's kind of the favorite in the SWAC West. And I know that's not a conference we're paying a ton of attention to usually, but you know, I just love it when these rivalries kind of mean something. And Southern very much improved this year, already passed last season's win total in year two under Kerrick Jackson. So a very much under the radar series to watch. Sorry to encroach on your territory, Joe, but that's where my head went when I saw the schedule for next weekend. So that will do it for us here on the Baseball America College Podcast. Absolutely loaded weekend of college baseball, wrapping it up here. Love the start of conference play around the country. Always gets things very interesting as these leagues get into the meat of their schedule. And they will continue that this week. And we will be back here next week to wrap all of that action up. There will be a new top 25. And in between now and then, we kind of have a little bit of a season recap theme this week at BaseballAmerica.com. We've reached, as Joe mentioned, the third of the way. We are a third of the way through the college baseball season. And as a lot of fans, I think, kind of transition, to college baseball with basketball being over or, about to be over for nearly everyone in the country. We start to see some interest pick up. So we'll kind of help everyone rehash the first 5 weeks and reset as conference play really gets underway for everyone around the country in the week ahead. So until then, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at Ted Cahill. Joe is Joe_on_sports. And Dave is Dave Serrano 11. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Joe and Dave for joining me here on the Baseball America College podcast. And we'll be back here next week again. So thank you for listening.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low maintenance vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.